Welcome to the Hendershot Gallery Podcast.
Today is Tuesday, April 25th, 2006, with Chuck Close. When did you consider yourself a professional artist and were able to dedicate yourself full-time to that pursuit?
Well, it's a multi-part answer, I suppose. I guess I knew I wanted to be an artist from the very beginning, like age five, and I started studying art when I was eight, and I was never interested in doing anything else, and, you know, it's been like a really... I've been very narrow. I've never even entertained the idea of anything else. So it's been like one like straight line highway. I suppose the point at which that continuum switched over to professional was a particular decision that I made in about 1967. Contrary to what was happening with even undergraduates, but graduate students today, where collectors are in buying work and they're in shows while they're still in school. I actually had a number of opportunities to show my work, and I chose not to until 1968, and that was a very conscious decision that had to do with work that I had a very strong, still do, strong belief that. That the act of going public is a very important decision. And everything you do from the point at which you go public is part of the public record and is out there and you cannot get it back. Anything before the time you go public is nobody's business, and you don't have to talk about it, you don't have to show it, you're not responsible, you can destroy it all or whatever. But there's something about that decision. Okay, I think I can put my neck on the line for this work, and I feel strongly enough about it that I will live with however I feel about it later. This is now part of the public realm. So that was about 1968, I think. Long answer to a quick question.
That's a good. And then how long have you been in this studio?
I've been in this studio, I've been, probably moved here about 1990, so that's... And this is 2006.
16 years?
Yeah.
When you moved into this space, did you have an idea how you wanted it laid out, or did it develop organically?
It was a rabbit warren of spaces. Many people shared this. Some people lived here, and some people worked here. And there was, but because I had the basement, I was able to run pipes and drains and move things around. So I moved the kitchen and the bath. I poked these windows through the walls to get light in from the side. So I rebuilt the skylights and stuff. I poured the concrete floor. I put a slot in the floor so the paintings could go up and down. I was looking for a place of natural light that was wheelchair accessible. So I wanted something on the ground floor, and you almost never find natural light on the ground floor. And the only way I could move a painting up and down was to own two floors. So finding it would be prohibitively expensive to own two floors up higher, so I got this and the basement.
Has the location of the studio had any influence or effect on your work?
Yeah, it was great to get out of Soho. We moved to Soho, what became Soho, in 67 until 84 when our second daughter was born, and we moved uptown. So somewhere in there I moved my studio to West 3rd Street, about 70 or five, I moved my studio to West 3rd Street, then to Spring and Crosby, and then here. I like this because it's out of the fray. It was convenient, close to stuff, when there still were reasons to go to Soho, not that there's much reason anymore. And I think it's influenced me a lot, although I must say, not as much as painting in the country yet.
How so?
Well, because it's a far more productive time, the phone doesn't ring, and all that stuff, but also the light is just incredible. So when I bring a painting like this that I did out in the country back here, I can't even see half the stuff that I know is in there.
Right.
Even with natural light in here.
Right.
Just not the same.
That's
so more and more I prefer to paint out there and come in here a couple days and just totally fuck up those days. In fact, I think of all the last show, I think every single painting was made in the country.
And the country studio, when did you have that built?
We bought that house 22 years ago, and I think I built the studio the second year.
Oh, so you've been out there so long time.
Yeah.
And when, I assume then you had that built to your specifications?
Yeah, just a modest little shell. I drove around and I measured some local vernacular barns, the proportions and, you know, the way the doors, barn doors slid and all of that sort of stuff. And I just sort of modeled it after. I just wanted it to be as ordinary.
Very as a modest space. I was surprised at first when I went to Pollock's place how small it was.
Yeah, and I mean, as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why I built the particular studio I did. I knew Lee Krasner and visited when she was still painting in that space. And I was always knocked out by how small it was. I try to imagine those really big paintings being made in there, but she made big paintings in there as well. And I thought, you know, there's really no reason to have a big studio. I used to be able to go open the barn doors and go all the way down to the pond and see. Open the barn doors is like painting outdoors.
It is. It's almost like painting outdoors. And then you have those great skylights above, too.
Yeah.
So
I think it was definitely the experience of visiting Lee and seeing that space that convinced me that I didn't have to, you know, go the route of a really, you know, big, glamorous studio out there. And that, in fact, here I have a lot of other activities going on in the same space. So I want to be able to close the doors and keep people there or keep people downstairs. And I just want to work alone out there. I didn't want there to be any space for anybody else to work, you know? So I prefer stretching and priming canvases here and then trucking them to the country. I prefer having all those activities here. And then I can just be in that studio alone. So I kept it small. I mean, the Herzog and de Meuron are doing the new Parish Art Museum, and they wanted to look at all the artist studios out there. To see whether the building in some ways could reflect the kind of local architecture and the way artists use space and light out there. And they were really shocked. Mine was by far the most modest. I mean, mine wouldn't even make bathroom in David Sally's place. Where,
you don't live here. Have you always had a separate studio from your living quarters?
When our first daughter was born, I worked in that same space, but when she needed a bigger bedroom, I moved out, and then I've never lived and worked in the same space. And especially now that I'm in a wheelchair and I have nurses and stuff come, it's really important that I inflict my lifestyle on the family as little as possible. So a separate studio is really essential.
Can you describe a typical day and be as specific as possible?
Oh, you got
it. I guess maybe a country day and a New York day.
Well, a typical country day, I am painting by 9 o'clock, and I usually work until noon, 3 hours in the morning. I have lunch either at my desk, or if it's nice, out by the pool, or if it's really nice, go to the beach for an hour. Have lunch on the beach, perhaps, and then I come back and I paint from 1 till 4, another 3 hours. And that's about then the light is failing and I'm beginning to fuck up. And so my nurse usually comes at 4. So at 4 I stop working, clean up, go have a big drink. That's a typical day. I work every day out there, every single day.
Weekends too?
Yeah. When I had children living at home, I did not work on weekends, but now I do. A typical day in the city is everything but painting, unfortunately.
And when you're working, do you listen to music or have the TV going? Or?
It changes over the years. I used to watch TV, then I used to listen to music. Then I got hooked on NPR, I listened to NPR. In the country, I like silence. Now I've been watching that too. I do watch baseball games out there and stuff. But also on Sunday, I start with CBS Sunday morning. Then I go to all the, you know, Meet the Press, all those things pretty much all day. And then when I can't stand anymore, I switch to Comedy Central to lighten up a little bit.
You use oil paints? Mm-hmm. Are you? What brands do you?
I use Holbein, Rembrandt, Old Holland.
Your painting table, like a specific, a little bit more interested in your wooden one. How long have you had that table, and how did you decide to set it up?
The one in the country?
Yes.
One in the country was actually a plant table. My wife used to take all of her begonias to the country, and we had a bunch of roll-around tables that they were on. So I just sort of appropriated one of them and slapped a couple of pieces of plywood on it and a piece of glass. This one was made for me by the guy who does the my easels as a gift. I used to have a similar wooden one here to the one in the country.
That was actually another thing. I liked how modest your painting table out there was. A couple 2x4s and some plywood.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always could paint anywhere, and I was never one of those people who had to have a perfect situation to paint in. I can make art anywhere, anytime, it doesn't matter. I mean, I know so many artists for whom having the perfect space is somehow essential, who spend years designing, building, outfitting the perfect, you know, the perfect space. And then when it's just about time to get to work, they'll, you know, sell that place to go build another one. Seems more often than not a way to keep from having to work, but we have rented, before we had our house in the country, we rented, and, you know, I paint anywhere. I made big paintings in the tiniest bedrooms, garages, you name it. But that, you know, once I had my back to the room, I could be anywhere. I couldn't care less.
Do you have any special devices or tools that are unique to your creative process?
Well, I used to use things like airbrush, electric erasers, stuff like that. And then I used to use my body as a tool. I used to do fingerprint pieces. I used to make pulp paper pieces. But basically, the oil paintings are just... they couldn't be more stock standard, with the exception of the fact that I use a brush holder strapped to my hand to hold the brush, which is an essential tool. It's unique to my process, I guess.
Are there any specific items that you keep in your studio that have significant meaning to you?
Significant items? No, I don't think so.
Do you work on one project at a time or several?
One painting at a time. Actually, right now, I am working on two paintings at one time, just for a short while, because I want to do the upper corner of this, because my pit in the country isn't quite deep enough to... So I'll take this painting out of some. I had one out there I'm going to bring back in.
How often do you clean your studio, and does that affect your work?
So every once in a while, we sort of try to get stuff up on the floor. My housekeeper comes in once a week, every other week or so, and mops the floor. I use the floor as a work table, so I have to keep it relatively clean. In the last studio I had before, I was in a wheelchair. I was in there for 10 years, never swept the floor once. It's just and cigarette butts and old coffee cups full of cigarette butts and beer cans and stuff. And there was like a little teeny pathway through all the shit. And it's funny because people look at my paintings and they think I must be neat, but I'm, you know, I'm a little slob. But I have had to keep this place neater to be able to work. But
how do you choose your subjects? How do you contact people that you don't know?
Well, mainly it's my family and friends and other artists. And I have to have some kind of a significant relationship with them. Not always are they my best friends, and especially with an artist of a different generation. It may be somebody that I've gotten to know or would like to know better, whom I feel I have some kind of significant relationship with through our work, some kind of dialogue in the work. And then it's nice to get to know them. But they don't necessarily have to be my absolute closest friends. But it has to be an important relationship. And then many are called, but few are chosen. I mean, I photograph probably 10 people for every person I finally paint. And I never know which ones are going to float to the surface.
Right. And then how do you come up with titles?
It's just the person's name.
Did you ever work for another artist?
I was never employed by another artist. I used to help Richard Serra build his pieces. He was a friend, we were classmates at Yale. Phil Glass was his only paid assistant. And then he just needed bodies. He needed a lot of bodies to move stuff around. So he would assemble groups of artists. But he was very smart. He never had another sculptor work for him. Because we were all, in some ways, kind of expending his ideas. You know, we would all sort of pick our brains, but we would be filmmakers or composers or novelists or painters. So he could sort of use us, bounce ideas off of, or in many cases we would go sit in this cafeteria, which is where Odeon is now, and just sit around and make up potential pieces on the backs of napkins, you know. But that's as close as I ever came to working for somebody.
Do you have a motto or creed that as an artist you live by?
Inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just show up and get to work. And a belief that things will grow out of the activity itself, and that you will, through work, bump into other possibilities and kick open other doors that you would never dream up if you're sitting around looking for a great art idea. And that a belief that process, in a sense, is liberating, in that you don't have to reinvent the wheel every day. Today you know what you do. You're going to be doing what you did yesterday, and tomorrow you're going to do what you do today, and at least for a certain period of time you can just work. If you hang in there, you'll get somewhere.
I've always believed that. Just keep working and eventually things will come.
Yeah.
Things will happen.
I've never had a painter's block in my whole life.
And the last question is, what advice would you give a young artist that is just starting out?
Well, I think it's an interesting time. I see this time, which is really from about 1980 on. We've been in a one long period of appropriation as the prime modus operandi, and whether it's neo-expressionism, neo-geo, neo-conceptual, neo-something or other, there's been this raiding of the cultural icebox, and that in this period, invention, innovation, and personal vision have all been demoted. I think while appropriation has produced some interesting work, and there are many people who really use it to advantage, I mean, there were comments on other work, or it's ironic, or there's a reason for them to appropriate. For me, the most interesting thing is to back yourself into your own corner where no one else's answers will fit. And you will somehow have to come up with your own personal solutions to this problem that you've set for yourself, because no one else's answers are applicable. And I think that's, I think it's a really, really good way to get all those other voices out of your studio and all the other people who are sharing that space with you. I just never wanted people to be in front of my work and be thinking about another artist. You know, so my advice to young artists is definitely flavored by what I like about working the way I work and my generation tended to work. And that's, sort of purging the work of references to other people and putting yourself in a position. So I think our whole society is much too problem-solving oriented, but it's far more interesting to problem creation is more interesting than problem solving.
Right.
You know, ask yourself an interesting enough question, and your attempt to find tailor-made solution to that question will push you someplace where you'll pretty soon find yourself all by your lonesome. which I think is a more interesting place to be.
Great. That's all the questions I have.
To subscribe to Hendershot Gallery's podcast, please click the link provided. Thank you, and stay tuned for the next Hendershot Gallery podcast.